Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Okay, this is our class on Shmuel. It might be our last one, I'm not sure. I'll have to let you know.
Can I ask when June leaves?
End of June.
End of June? Oh, my goodness.
So it depends a little bit on my schedule and what Robinson wants me to do in June, so I'll have to see.
Yeah.
I mean, you're more than welcome to bring me back.
I didn't know that.
He just took a new position.
I took a different job, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Good luck.
Thank you. It's certainly a bittersweet leaving.
Is Mindy leaving also?
Yeah, Mindy is also going, yeah.
At Ramato Rock.
Yeah, we're going together. We come to the panel.
No, well, sometimes.
Yeah, no.
It'd be too hard.
Yeah, it'd be too hard to do both.
Not really
so fast. I mean, I
assumed, but. What? Where are you going? Ramat Ora? It's on 110.
It's in Israel?
No, it's 110th Street. Everyone's welcome to come there. I don't want to try to lose members, few members here, but you are more than welcome to come to my classes. I'm just over there, too.
You know what? Having interesting things.
Yeah, there are some very interesting people there. Yeah. All right, so you guys are all welcome, of course, when I teach classes there, to come there, but I'm not trying to steal members from Lincoln Square. There'll be a great staff next year here as well. All right, the class I want to talk about today, we've been dealing with Sefer Shmuel, Book of Shmuel, and primarily, we've been focusing on different connections between Book of Shmuel and other books in Tanakh. And today, I want to really focus on one particular connection, a strand of connections, that relates particularly well to the upcoming holiday of Shavuot, that relates specifically to Megillat Rut. And we know the basic comparison, like what's the comparison, the simple relationship between Sefer Shmuel and Megillat Rut, and they want to...
Ruth is David
Hamelach's
great grandmother.
Yeah, so Ruth is his grandmother. If Ruth is David Hamelach's grandmother, great grandmother, right? So Ovid Yishai to be great grandmother. So certainly there is a familial connection there. But I want to point out, and I want to suggest to you this year, there is more to it than just a family connection. So I think what we'll see is that the things which animate Megillat Rut, the things which define who she is, are also going to affect David throughout his life. And there are a number of stories that I think carry that theme together. So first off, anyone have any, besides the clear lineage, the fact that they are both the same family, any other connections or things that relate between David HaMelech and Ruth? Anyone can think of anything? He came from Ruth. So other than that, yeah, he came from Ruth. Other than the direct lineage,
well,
back then.
He was considered an outsider, and after David was anointed king, he was kind of an outsider with the current king, Montel.
Yeah, not only that, but remember, you guys remember we talked about this a little while ago, about how David HaMelech was first anointed in chapter 16. Right, so we're not doing a specific page yet. Turn to page chapter 16 of Book of Shmuel. It's on page 682. So, as you remember, the way that David HaMelech was first anointed as king, this is the story of how he became king. We're told that Shmuel Hanavi is told to stop mourning your replacement Shaul. Instead, I want you to go and appoint someone else as king. So where does Shmuel being sent to? He's sent to a certain town of Beit Lechem. And who else was from Beit Lechem? Well, Ruth. Obviously, it's a family connection. But Ruth, interestingly enough, also doesn't just come from Beit Lechem, but she travels from a foreign land to Beit Lechem. So Shmuel also travels from a foreign land from a distance to Beit Lechem. And he arrived at Beit Lechem, and what do they do in Beit Lechem? We're told that, what is the city's reaction to Shmuel appearing? Take a look at verse 4 in chapter 16, page 682. Vayav Shmuel itasher diber Adonai, vayavo Beit Lechem, so Shmuel arrived in Beit Lechem, vayecherdu zikne ha'ir likrato, vayomer shalom boecha. So what is the city's response? They are scared. They have some type of tumult. And if you might remember from Megillat Rut, there too there is a slight discussion of what happens in the city when Rut arrives to the city. Rut and Naomi arrive in the city. Batehom kolair aleihem. Didn't recognize her. Yeah. Yeah, and the expression is before that is batehom kolair aleihem, that the city all like there's a tumult in the city, like, oh my gosh, this visitor came back. So we have a tumult that surrounds visitors. And then think about also the next part of the scene. When Shmuel comes to anoint David HaMelech, right, he goes to the house of Yishai. And he says to Yishai, I want to see your sons. And he sees the oldest son, he thinks maybe it's Eliyahu, the oldest son. God says, no, it's not the oldest son, it's someone else. He goes through all the sons, none of the sons. Then what happens? Shmuel says to Yishai, do you have another son? And Yishai says, yes, I have another son, but, you know, he's tending the sheep, he's not here, we'll call him over, but he's not that important. Interestingly enough, when Naomi comes into town, everyone is clamoring around Naomi, but does anyone talk to Ruth?
Not
really. She's pretty much ignored. She's the help. You know, she's the assistant. The maid, she comes with, but she's nobody's... Nobody.
That's what I was thinking.
What?
She's Cinderella.
Cinderella, yeah.
Well, she was new. Nobody knew where she came from.
Sure, but and hopefully in most places when a newcomer comes in, hopefully everyone says hi to the newcomer. They don't just ignore the newcomer, hopefully.
They probably tell she was a Moabiyah. She must have looked different because everybody knew that. So they didn't like that probably.
So there's something interesting that certainly she's foreign, but you get the impression that David HaMelech... He's not foreign in the sense that he doesn't come from somewhere else, but he's not exactly naturally well-liked.
Yeah, like he's not... defeated Goliath?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
Not yet. Not yet. He took Goliath. He's not... Yishai hasn't, like, not even come to this meal. Even though it's a big meal, everyone's supposed to come here. Yishai says, like, oh, I left him behind to wash the sheep. I didn't think he was so important. He comes. And his brothers, even later, don't seem to have a particularly great reaction at first, at least.
At the battle.
At the battle, Eliyahu, like, yells at him, pretty much, criticizes him.
Not that it's the same, but it's somewhat the same. He's called Admoni here.
Well, what is,
I know.
Yeah, where's Roots?
I know, Moab, but, well, oh, but they're,
Well, Edom and Moab, I guess, are,
They're sort of connected. First of all, it goes to the foreign point.
Yeah.
Called Admoni, which is just a sort of foreign element to him. And also there's foreigner. Right?
Yeah, and throughout, it is true that throughout his time, David HaMelech has to run away from Shaul for many years. And for some of those years, he spends time in foreign lands. Mm-hmm. He spends time in Moab, in Ammon, in the Plishti lands, in the Amaleki lands. He spends time in the foreign lands, not so different than someone else who left Israel because of there was some type of problem and went to a foreign land. Elimelech, when there is a famine, goes with his family to a foreign land. So we have like similar parallels that already kind of begin to give the sense that David and Ruth, they share similar, not just same lineage, but they share similar beginnings. The story takes place in similar places. They both have this sense of being a foreigner that people don't naturally respect or don't naturally, are close to. And yet they end up growing and becoming great characters in Israel. So already kind of the start, I kind of want to point out there's something already there.
It is true that Beit Lechem likely to be the place where, you know, it's just a couple generations later, people tended to stay around where they were for a couple of generations.
So. Yeah, for sure. It's true that, like, that. I mean, I agree, the family thing, Beit Lechem, is not itself so significant, but it's, you know, it's just another, I guess, you know, hat in the bucket.
Basically, you're right, because first of all, you had to live where your shaver was, and you couldn't move too far,
right.
And that family's land was over there, they might be there too.
Here I have this. anymore, yeah.
Yeah, then they would inherit his role as in plants.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, there's another parallel. We're going through a lot of stories, but I want to just talk about one more before we get to some of the specific stories. There's this really interesting parallel that I read actually just last night, and I thought it was so interesting. In perhaps the most enigmatic scene in Megillah's Rut, Rut comes to Boaz in the middle of the night, and she is told to do something. It's not clear exactly what. Is she meant to seduce him? Is she not meant to seduce him?
She sends him Naomi.
What? Naomi sends her. Yeah, Naomi sends her. Not entirely clear exactly what he's supposed to do, but it's certainly clear that she comes quietly, discreetly when he's asleep, and she uncovers his legs. That much is clear.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, she tells him, when he asks, who are you, she says, you should spread literally Kanafim's wing over your maidservant because you are a redeemer. Now, this is, it's not like the strongest connection in the world, but it's actually really interesting just to think about. David HaMelech has an interaction with Shaul in chapter 24, where Shaul HaMelech is trying to chase after him and doesn't know where David HaMelech is. So what happens? David HaMelech runs into a cave. And we're told that Shaul, they're running around, they don't know where David HaMelech is. At some point, Shaul goes into the cave to relieve himself. And just to be a little bit clearer, in order to relieve yourself, you need to uncover your legs. And when David HaMelech what David HaMelech does at that moment is he grabs one of, he sneakily comes right behind Shaul and he grabs a part of his coat, a knaf of his meal, a corner of his coat, and afterwards when Shaul leaves the cave, he says, see, I have your corner, like I could have killed you, like I'm not, I'm an enemy. And really interestingly, the word language in both stories is remarkably similar, because in both stories, we're told that both Rut and David come bilat, bet lamet het. What does bilat mean? Bilat means with, like with certain, so it's like, but also like deceptively. Yeah, deceptively, trickery, it's clearly it has like a certain trickery to it. And yet, so it's not a particularly common word, and yet both of them do that same thing with a scene where legs are uncovered and a wing or a piece of garment is taken. And I don't think it's, the symbolism here I think is somewhat similar. It's not exactly the same like, same scene, but I think there's something, or we get a sense that there's something parallel between the two of them. Now, what's the significance of this parallel? Well, I would point out that in both scenes, you have an opportunity to abuse someone, to do something wrong, to do something, some misbehavior, because you're doing something with treachery. Right? Rut comes middle of the night, and she can seduce Boaz. He's drunk, he's eaten, he's sleeping, he's not fully with cognizant of what's happening. She certainly comes in with the ability, not the intention of doing something not particularly, menschlichite.
Untoward.
And David HaMelech comes also sneakily, same exact word, and he can kill Shaul. There's no guards, he's not protected. He finally can kill the man who's been hunting him for many years. And in both cases, both David and his great-grandmother, Rut, go out of their way to not act in that way. Despite walking and approaching the scene through deceptive means, both of them are like at night or in dark spaces, right? The Rut's coming at night, David's in a dark cave, it's at night, they're coming and tricking him, and yet they don't take advantage. David only takes a small bit of the coat, but he doesn't actually kill Shaul. And just like Rut doesn't actually sleep with Boaz. There's something I think already in these, I think there's already something in this part of the story that kind of suggests to us that in some ways David and Melech's actions might model themselves off of the actions of Rut. But I want to further, as we go through this year, I want to really kind of crystallize exactly what I mean by that. And to do that, we're going to go through a number of stories throughout David and Melech's life that I think have a number of strong parallels throughout the life of Rut. So the next story, have any other like suggestions of stories or other parallels? If you don't look at the sheet, if you look at the sheet then I'll tell you over. Okay, so another story. We read this, I think, 2 weeks ago. The story of David and Abigail.
Mm-hmm.
Right, this is chapter 25 of the book of Shmuel. If you want to turn, you can turn to page 708 in the book. 708, chapter 25 of the book of Shmuel. And we read there, we're not going to read the whole thing inside because it's a long story. We read it, I think, just 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But the story presents a tale of David is out in the fields, and there is a wealthy man, Nabal, who is shearing his sheep. Happy time. And David asks for payment for having watched over the sheep, guarded them. Nabal refuses to give him the payment. David, enraged, is coming to attack, coming to pillage, and you know, maybe severely harm, kill even Nabal. And Abigail, Nabal's wife, hears about this. She comes hiddenly, middle of the night. She comes to David, stops him, convinces him not to hurt Nabal. Nabal ends up dying based on natural or godly means, and they end up getting married, Abigail and David. Now, that story has some very interesting parallels to the story of Megillat Rut. What do I mean by that? Anyone have any suggestions that come across?
Marriage.
So both stories, we have someone who begins the story, right? Both stories, Abigail and Ruth, were they previously married? They were previously married. And both of their husbands die. We're not sure exactly why Machlon dies, but it seems like it's a God, you know, given reason. You know, there's like something natural of sorts that he dies, that just as Nabal dies, based on God's actions. And they both end up remarrying and marrying like the hero of the story. But it's not just that. There's a little bit more here. In both stories, right, anything else anyone can think of?
The rejection, sort of. I was thinking that there was someone who, forget it.
Well, there's a Goel, right, in both. I mean, so Boaz is there for Ruth, and Abigail sort of saves David.
Yeah, there is something about the saving that's really interesting, that Abigail is saving David from killing, from himself, from his, you know, there's certainly something about it. And also the language David uses actually remarkably parallels the way that Boaz talks about Ruth. Boaz says to Ruth at some point, Brucha at ladonai viti, hitab chazeh acharon min harishon. Blessed are you, my daughter, to God. Your latest chesed is even better than your previous chesed. And interestingly, after Abigail convinces David to calm down and not to attack Nabal, he says to her, Uvaruch tameich uvrucha at. Blessed are you. I mean, it's not exactly identical, but it's similar response to someone having prevented you or having done some act of chesed towards you.
Another one, though.
Yeah.
Food.
Yes. What about food?
Boaz supplies Ruth with food that she needed, and this is what the David was.
Yeah, they both have food. Not only that, but think about the time of year. It's not exactly the same time of year, but in the case of Boaz and Ruth, what type of year are they talking about?
Right now,
the harvest season, right? So this is like the best time, so to speak, the climactic moment within the grain agricultural season, right? The moment you harvest everything. And when is the story of Abigail and Nabal, when is that story taking place?
The
shearing of the sheep, which if you're a sheep owner, that's the climactic moment of the sheep season, because that's the moment where you can get the wool and, you know, sell the wool. So it's kind of this happy celebratory moment. And in both stories, like there's actually the ways the stories present themselves, like it really goes through this, but there's the progression of the story in many ways parallels the progression of the story with Abigail and David. They come and they're not appreciated at first, and then they come later on, they have a second meeting. There's a lot of these similar, and the second meeting, there's something also very similar, because Ruth comes to David, to Boaz, and she comes secretly, right? Nobody knows about it. And actually, they say explicitly, "Al yibada ish," no one should know. "Kivayisha hagoren halayla," and no one should know that a woman came to visit me in the threshing floor tonight. Interestingly enough, Abigail, when she comes to visit David, does anyone know that she's coming?
No.
Well, if we're told explicitly that she does not tell her husband. She's hiding that information from an Ish, from her husband. So there's a little bit, there's something that seems rather similar in that Abigail seems to some ways parallel Ruth's actions in that she does some type of chesed toward David, similarly the way that Ruth does chesed towards Boaz. And the word chesed appears over and over again. It's slightly different in terms of exactly what the chesed is, but there's that same sense of a woman coming and doing something very kind and saving someone or motivating them to do something. They end up getting married at the end. Right? Boaz, we kind of see him sitting on his laurels. He's not really about to marry her, and Ruth has to come and, you know, do something until he finally, you know, takes the step forward. So it's not exactly the same, but we kind of get a sense of there's something very similar and resembling in both stories. There's a few other small things, but I think I'll move on. But that's kind of the, in terms of language, both stories, Ruth and Abigail, when they first meet their, you know, David and, what?
In the field.
They meet in the field, but they also, the first thing they do is they bow down, which many women do not bow down at some point, but the only time that they bow down, we're told, like on their face, this is the only two women that this happens to. So there's like also some other linguistic parallels between the two stories, and I show out a few others, but I think you get the point. I think there's something clearly between the two stories that are meant to be reflecting on each other. What's the point? Why in some ways parallel Abigail, Nabal, David, with Ruth and Boaz? What's the point of that? Any suggestions?
So I just to mention the thing that I probably was thinking of is that Ruth was Boaz was doing something that somebody else should have done, and Tony Almoni, he does what Tony Almoni should have done. And
Abigail
is doing something that her husband should have done.
Yeah, in both stories, we kind of get the sense of, like, this should have been someone else doing something, and there's an interlocutor who has to come and convince them. Yeah, there's very similar elements in that. So what's the point of all these similarities? So I'll suggest two ways. The first one I don't particularly agree with. I just happened to have seen it yesterday. Professor Yitzhak Berger wrote an article about this, and this is his position. I personally does not resonate with me, but I'll share it. He argues that in the story of David and Abigail, does David do the right thing? Or is he, better yet, is David presented as a good character in the story?
Not particularly.
He gets stopped and he admits his faults, but he certainly has this bloodthirsty, hot-headed, aggressive. We talked about this when we compared him to Esav even, and Yaakov, and Laban. Like, there are certain aspects of his story that seem rather negative of him. This isn't the king that we, you know, the poet that we expected. And the way that Yitzhak Berger argues it, Abigail in this story, does she appear as a great heroine?
Her husband.
So it does, is there anything that might like make you question her a little bit?
Well, she's trying to protect her house and family, so she's kind of got her self-interest involved.
Well, there's something interesting. This is what he really glotches on.
I forget why, but you get the impression that it's sort of like a double story or something.
Yeah. There is something about it. Yeah, that kind of. There's something a little fishy about the story,
yeah.
Where it's not entirely clear exactly how explicit it is. But Abigail, like, imagine, right? There's this man who wants to kill your husband, and what does Abigail do? She goes secretly, without her husband knowing. She goes and meets this man and brings him gifts. And tells this man, don't harm my husband yourself, because God will kill him in a few days. Mm-hmm. And like, whether that meant that she meant that Baruch will kill him or not, there's certainly that like more sinister, like, oh, God will kill him, you know, sounds a little like Lady Macbeth. You know, something might happen. I'm not saying she did kill Nabal. I'm just saying there's something that feels a little bit off. Because then right afterwards, she marries David. And not only that, but even while they're talking, There's a line she says at one point, I'm not really able to look at it inside, but at some point during the conversation, she says to David that he should remember v'zachartit amateich, he should remember his maidservant, meaning remember Abigail. And many understand that in that line, what she's saying is, remember me, meaning, therefore, marry me. So she's currently married to someone else. I'm not sure that's the only way to read that verse, but this is a very traditional way of reading that verse. And if so, then while she's still married to her husband, while this aggressor wants to kill her husband, she's saying, don't kill him, he's going to die, let's get married in 10 days. Let's get married a little bit. There's something a little fishy about that. So this is Yitzchak Berger's argument, Professor Yitzchak Berger's argument, is that both Abigail and David don't come off looking particularly well. And in contrast, Ruth and Boaz are model citizens. They are excellent examples of what chesed should be and how to act in proper methods and, you know, the way they interact with each other. And maybe in some ways, part of that comparison is really to act as a foil and to argue that, look how David and Abigail are really so far off from Ruth and Boaz. Right, the apple fell very far from the tree. That's his way of reading it. If you like it, that's some way to read it. I actually tend to not, I certainly think that the story of Abigail and David is a much more complicated story than just she's perfect. You know, I think there's more to it, that's for sure true. But I tend to have like a more positive view of the story as a whole. And I would actually argue something different. I think it's true that David HaMelech does come off as a hothead in the story. But at the end of the day, does David HaMelech kill Nabal? No, he stopped. He prevented. Mm-hmm. Right? He does, in effect, a favor to Nabal. He threatens to do something, but he ends up not doing it. He doesn't end up carrying out his threat. Why not? Because he is stopped. He is almost, you could say, saved from committing that act. And so a different way of reading the parallel might be to suggest perhaps David HaMelech is saved in the merit of the actions of his grandmother. Because Ruth, in a similar setting, was able to go above and beyond, to not trick Boaz, to not take advantage of the situation, and instead was able to act, you know, in this menschlichite way, this above and beyond fashion, perhaps in her merit, David HaMelech was given this opportunity to be saved from sin by another woman, Abigail, who acts similarly to Ruth. So maybe if anything, like the parables actually suggest something positive about that David has this kind of merit that protects him in some ways based on the merit of his great-grandmother of Ruth. Yeah.
Okay, I always looked at this differently. This may be a male-female type of thing, I'm not sure. But I mean, I always looked at it as the good guy there was Boaz, that he was presented with the opportunity to do something he shouldn't do, and he declined to do it. As opposed to Ruth, she could have gone further, I guess, or whatever. But the restraint seemed to me always on Boaz's part rather than her part.
So I think Boaz certainly, you know, was very, you know, a great character in that scene. I think that's certainly true. But I personally would read the story that Ruth also has that quality. First off, Boaz explicitly says that your chesed of coming to me and not looking after the younger men and coming after me and, you know, wanting to stay within the family, that itself is a chesed. He calls her like a balat chesed in that very scene. He's acknowledging it. But also that scene suggests, and this is the way I read this like a few weeks ago in one of my Shabbos classes. I think the scene there, like my own view is that I think Naomi's suggesting obliquely that Ruth perhaps does a little bit more than just sleep next to Boaz, but a little bit more to it, and Ruth doesn't carry out all of Naomi's requests. So I think actually Naomi, Ruth does do something that, you know, shows more of her restraint and her chesed than just, you know, and Boaz is not the only one in the scene to do something. That's kind of my reading, but, you know, feel free to, yeah. So I think certainly, getting back to our point, I think there's certainly something about Rut in the Book of Rut that animates the way that we then view David. And the theme that we're going to kind of see over and over again is that there's one theme that's central to Megillat Rut. It's the theme of chesed, of kindness. Rut is a kind individual. She's almost self-nullifying. Right? There's almost a sense of abnegation, of like she almost nullifies her entire personality to give over everything to Naomi, even her children. Her child is born, we're told, is Naomi's child, in effect. Right? She does almost everything for Naomi. And everyone says, you are like a eshet chayil. You really are someone who epitomizes what chesed is. Boaz also is someone who does a lot of chesed. So the Megillah really is about this concept of chesed over and over again. And I think that whether you see David HaMelech as a foil, as a contrast, or as a complement to his great-grandmother, I think regardless, the theme of chesed kind of keeps coming up and up, up and over again with David HaMelech throughout his life, and it kind of animates who he is and his dynasty. Yeah.
Just a question, because I don't remember. Is he nice to Abigail down the road? I mean, isn't later on he doesn't treat her well? Or why?
There's not really other scenes with Abigail.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
This is kind of the other only scene.
Yeah.
She was a problem.
Yeah, we don't really have too many scenes with David and his wives.
Okay.
They kind of usually, like, each wife is kind of limited to one scene, and then.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then they're
married her after her husband died, so it says she's very good looking and she was very nice and she helped him, so.
Yeah, but she seems, you can read Abigail in more favorable terms, you can read it in more critical terms, that's certainly up to interpretation.
Given David and his son, later Shlomo's penchant for women, not a surprise that he would want to marry her once she became an Almana.
Yeah, and she is a character who, you know, convince them to do better.
Right.
And if anything, that's kind of like Ruth. Like, don't you want to marry someone who is going to push you to be a better person? Like, that sounds like the perfect, you know, match in some ways. Like, that's what you should be striving for.
A better wife for her, a better person for her.
Well, I don't know who's the... Yeah, I mean, she might be seven, but he might be the reacher, you know. But, yeah, okay. So, there's another... I want to go through a few more stories, a few more cases where there is something we can kind of see this parallel come up. Another story, this is a story from Sefer Shmuel Bet, and it's a rather unremarkable or unnoticeable, not particularly noticed detail. But in the story of, we're mostly going to look at the sheet because there's just have a lot of things to look at. In the story of the rebellion of Avshalom, right? So in the book of Shmuel Bet, in the second book of Samuel, we're told the story that at some point, David's son, at that point he's kind of the oldest son left over, wants to take over the crown, take over the kingdom, and he kind of expels David. David runs away and like kind of runs away to exile across the Jordan River because his son kind of takes over and leads a really successful rebellion. Ultimately, the rebellion ends up failing, and there's a war and ends up failing, but David is really displaced from his house. He has to leave, and he's in a rather precarious situation. So during that rebellion, one of the characters who we encounter as kind of a side character is this individual called Ittai Hagiti. Now, Ittai Hagiti is not Jewish. He's from Gat, which is, I think originally somewhere in Africa. I think that's the typical thing, but typical arguments, but it's certainly not Jewish. It's very clear he's not Jewish. And David says to him, actually, let's take a look at the verse. This is on Shmuel Bet, chapter 15. I'll tell you the page in a second. Take a look at it. Take a look at page 760. Give me a second to turn there. So while David is leaving the palace, they're running away, you know, head over their heels, they're really running away from this oncoming rebellion, this army that's coming. So we're told that David HaMelech is running away, And as he runs away, we're told on verse 18, page 760, so many of David's supporters, who happen to not be Jewish, the Kreti, the Pleti, and the people from Gath, some of them, these military, his people who had joined the army, who were inspired by David, they also joined him in fleeing and leaving at the time. So at this point, the scene changes, it becomes more specific, and we're told the following conversation takes place. Verse 19. So David the Melech speaks to Ittai and says the following. Lama teleich gamata itanu? Why should you come with us? Go and stay with the king because you are a not Jewish. And there's no reason for you to be exiled from your natural home. Tomorrow, you arrived just yesterday, you just arrived. And should you really come with us? And I am going where I am going, meaning I have no future, I have no prospects. Go and stay with your brothers and do a chesed. The very act of staying with me, making the suggestion, is an act of chesed. The theme continues, if it doesn't seem similar enough yet. Vayan iti et hamelech vayomar. Itai responds the following. Chai Adonai v'chei Adoni hamelech. I swear in the name of God, who's not my God, but God that you worship, and in the name of the king, ki im b'makom asher yesham Adoni hamelech, im lamavet, im lachayim, hisham ye'avdecha. Because I swear to you that wherever the king is, whether it's for life, whether it's for death, I will always be with you. Vayomer David el Itai lech avor. So David reluctantly agrees and says to Itai, come along, go with us. What does this scene remind us of?
Ruth and Naomi.
Ruth and Naomi, yes. Ruth and Naomi have shockingly very similar scenes. There too we have someone who is leaving where they are. Naomi is returning back home, and you have the same word of shov, return, over and over again. So it's a little bit different in terms of where she's going, but she tells over and over again Ruth and Orpah, don't come with me, stay in your home. Like David tells Ittai, don't come with me. Both of them say, I have no prospects. Right? David says, like, I don't know what's going to happen to me. My son has kicked me out. And Naomi says to Ruth the same thing. I have no prospects. I'm old. I don't have any children. Even if I had children, it can take years until they're old enough to marry you. I have no prospects. Don't come with me. And in both stories, what's the response? Okay. Naomi's Ruth and Ittai say, I swear to you, or they use language that's very forceful, that whatever happens, I am not leaving your side. Whether you're for death or for life, wherever you are, I will go with you. It's an incredibly similar scene. And in both scenes, they end up relenting. Naomi relents and allows Ruth to come with her, and David relents and allows Naomi to allows Ruth to come with her. Sorry, David allows Ittai to come with him. So in both scenes, we have this incredible similarity that happens in both cases. And now, apparently, I'm not sure at the very end, we're not going to read this inside, but in both cases, at the end of the story, Ruth plays a rather important role in restoring Naomi back to her former, you know, if you can say former, to some form of, you know, glory or some type of status, because Ruth is the one who ends up having a child, which then, you know, gives Naomi a grandchild of sorts and, you know, gives her back hope. And Ittai Yagiti, we're told, ends up being one of the three main generals that David HaMelech has in his battle against Absalom, where he ends up being victorious. So he also plays a rather significant role in David's success at the end of the story. So I think it's pretty clear, there are a lot of parallels, the stories are clearly meant to reflect one off another. What's the point of the parallels? But why make the story of Ittai Yagiti, this random guy who's not Jewish, talk about staying with David, not staying with David, make him swear, I'm going to stay where you are?
Loyalty.
So I think there might be this chest idea. I think there might be this idea that, yeah, maybe David HaMelech, David HaMelech, I don't think he's doing anything wrong in this scene. I don't think the way that the guy scene, you can talk about David doing something wrong. But certainly David is being shown this extraordinary chesed. And I don't think it's such a stretch to say that perhaps that chesed is meant to remind us of the chesed that his great-grandmother did. And maybe one acts as a kind of a merit for the other. Maybe because of the chesed that Ruth showed towards Boaz and Naomi, maybe for that same reason, David deserved to have the chesed that Itai Agiti shows to him. So I think you kind of see this kernel that kind of repeats itself over and over again throughout David's life.
It's also the foreigner who's giving the chesed.
Yeah, in both cases, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I want to talk about two more stories that I think are really important to, that I think, yeah, crystallize a little bit this idea of chesed that kind of encapsulates this story. In the beginning of chapter of Shmuel Bet, it's the second book of Samuel, we're told the following interesting story. You can take a look at it, actually. It's on page, it's in chapter 2, page, I'll say in a second, page 726. So the very end of Shmuel Aleph, the very end of 1 Samuel and the first chapter of Shmuel Bet, Shaul HaMelech dies. And how does Shaul HaMelech die?
He kills himself.
Well, he kills himself, but he dies during battle. And what happens to his body?
Is that where they cut off his head?
No, they don't cut off his head.
Yeah, they're confusing his story.
No, he doesn't cut off his head here. I mean, if I'm not mistaken.
No, sorry. Right.
What
happens at the end of Shmuel?
Yeah, I don't think he cuts off his head. I'm forgetting. But whatever happens to his body?
Sorry.
His body is taken by the opposing army. They pushed him. Actually, they take his army and take his body, and they display it. You know, they portray it like, wow, look, we have, you know, not his head, but we have his body on a spike, and like, look, we defeated our enemies.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening? We're told the following interesting thing: that the people of Yavesh Gilad, who's Yavesh Gilad? Yavesh Gilad is a town that lives across the Jordan River. That in the very beginning of Shaul's reign, they were attacked. And Shaul goes out of his way to defend them. And so these people, now that Shaul has died, they go out of their way to secretly at night go and grab Shaul's body and bring it back so he can have a proper Jewish burial. And so at this moment, David HaMelech hears this whole thing, and he says the following thing to them. Look at page 726, verse 5. Vayishlach David malachim l'anshei Yavesh Gilad. So David sends messengers to the people of Yavesh Gilad saying the following. Vayomer aleihem, Bruchim atem l'adonai asher achitem achesed azeh im adoneichem im Shaul v'tikberu oto. Blessed are you to God for having done this chesed with your master, with Shaul, and buried him. Ve'ata, and now, Yas Adonai imachem chesed ve'emet. May God grant with you a chesed and truth. V'gam anochi eseh itchen hotova zot asher asitem adavar hazeh. And I too will do a chesed for you for doing this thing. V'ata techeskena yedeichem. Now, strengthen yourself. V'yu livnechayo and become men of valor. Ki meit adon yechem Shaul v'gam otim mashchu v'et yudah l'melech aleihem, because your master Shaul died, and I am now going to be king to replace him. This language reminds us of anything? This language of Barucha, of Baruch, Atal, Hashem, Asher, Asita, Tachesed, Azeh, and Beata, Yas, Adonai, Ima, Chesed, Vet, Chesed. Right? Does that remind you of anything?
Doesn't Boaz say that to
Ruth? Yeah, Boaz says almost the exact same thing to Ruth. Naomi also says it about Boaz in this case. Actually, Naomi says it to Boaz. There's a few times where Naomi's talking about it. But we have very similar language of this acknowledgement in Megillat Ruth of someone did a chesed, and the recipient of the chesed says, blessed are you to God who did this chesed. Now, may God, I bless you, that may God bless you and repay you for the kindness that you gave me. Take a look, for instance, if you want, at the back page. is actually a little short. You can actually see, like, the language here is actually remarkably similar. Right? Just as David says, Yas Adonai imachem chesed ve'emet, so Naomi says to her daughters-in-law, Yas Adonai imachem chesed. And just as Boaz later on says to, Naomi later tells Ruth, Bruchim atem la'adonai asher asitem l'chesed hazeh, so too, Naomi says, Baruch hu la'adonai asher lo azav chazot achrim v'tametim. And in both stories, we have an expression that these individuals are gibor chayil, or an eshet chayil. They are men or women of valor. Ruth is called a woman of valor, and Boaz is called a man of valor. So we have all these really interesting parallels, right, to this scene, this random specific scene about burial. You know, what's happening here? Why is it so significant? Why is there another parallel in Shmuel to Ruth? Like, why are we calling Ruth again? Any suggestions? Any questions so far, or things that weren't clear? Just by any repeat? Yeah.
He's taking on the kingship here now, right?
Yeah.
So he needs, I guess he needs blessings or, you know, something from his history, from Ruth.
Yeah, he certainly is like, you know, maybe he's recalling it. That's certainly true that he's recalling maybe the kindness that she did in the past. But I think there's something interesting that David HaMelech is at this moment, he himself is not doing a chesed, but he's recognizing a chesed. Right? And he's recognizing the chesed that, and this is a particular type of chesed. It's a chesed where the language is very parallel, but the case is a little bit different. Because in Ruth's case, right, does Ruth do anything, or sorry, does Ruth owe this chesed to Naomi?
No.
No. Naomi did, like, you know, I'm sure she was a nice mother-in-law, but she certainly does not, you know, deserve or doesn't, you know, nothing, she doesn't need, right, she nothing obligates her to pay back this chesed. And yet, even though the Beis Shilat, they, in some ways, they are obligated in this chesed because Shaul did something nice to them. Shaul was saved them from Amon HaNechashi, from the foreign enemy. So they're kind of paying him back. But yet, here's what's really interesting. If I had to ask a question of chesed, right, we talk about kindness. So there are two types of kindnesses. There's kindness that's often given blanket without response to anything, right? And, well, that's a different type of kindness. Yeah. There's gratuitous kindness, and then there's kindness that's sometimes given, you know, as a response. Like, you did something nice to me, you invited me over when I, you know, had a time of need, so I'll invite you over when you have a time of need. Typically, of the two of those, which one do we usually see as better?
The first one.
Usually we see gratuitous as better, right? Because there's no, you know, it's gratuitous. There's no, nothing inspiring you, there's no sense of obligation. There's no sense that you need to reciprocate. And I think it's certainly true that there's something really nice about gratuitous or like one-sided, unilateral kindness. But I think what the parallels here in the story of Shmuel and David specifically kind of pushes us is that there might be a lot of value, and maybe even more value, in a type of chesed where you are reciprocating a past chesed. Because while it is true that while reciprocating a past chesed, it's, you know, you could view it in more, you know, slightly more cynical terms of you're just paying back a debt, right? You're just getting even, you know, one for one. There's also perhaps a way of reading it, you know, more favorably, that when I acknowledge a chesed that's done to me and I pay it back, yes, maybe I'm paying back a debt that's due, but in some ways I am also giving credit to the chesed that you gave to me. Right, I'm saying that, you know, it wasn't just like a favor you gave, you know, for no reason. I'm acknowledging you did something really great. And I am now, by giving you this chesed back, I'm in fact doing two things. Not only am I doing a chesed to you, but I'm also acknowledging the past chesed that you gave to me. I'm almost saying thank you in a very clear, emphatic way. So there's actually something really special in the fact that there is a reciprocal chesed, something that, you know, we have a relationship that's now based on the chesed. It's not just a unilateral relationship, it's a bilateral relationship that's defined based on chesed. And interestingly enough, the story of David in the book of Shmuel often has this sort of sense of David having not a chesed of unilateral chesed, the way that his great-grandmother has it, but often has this kind of this bilateral chesed. The people of Yavesh Gilad are reciprocating or replicating the language of Naomi. David is replicating the language of Naomi, very directly of acknowledging the chesed. But unlike Naomi, where Naomi just says God should be the one to pay you back, who does David say should pay you back? Take a look at that verse in the box again. Take a look if you want to look at the verse at verse 6.
I too.
David says, first, God should pay you back, and I too should pay you back. Right? He's adding himself to the story. He himself saying, even though he himself is not directly involved in this, but he is including himself within this, you know, this group of chesed, people of kindness. He wants to join the club. He wants to become part of the group of people doing chesed. And there's something rather remarkable about that, that he recognizes the chesed that was done to someone else, and now is joining it almost in the spirit or the inspiration of the actions of his ancestors. Now this theme about David being focused primarily on chesed as a form of paying back is something that actually captures a number of stories of David HaMelech. And I'll focus on one that we'll end with, which will be the last story we'll really talk about. And it's one particular relationship that animates much of David's life. It's his relationship with Yonatan, with his good friend, maybe very good friend, Yonatan. And the story of Yonatan and David is a story that, we don't have a lot of time to look through the whole verse. Take a look at the sheet. It's actually, you have English and Hebrew. Take a look at the next verse. We're told, this is in chapter 20. It's actually, we have a story we read just this past week, the story of Machar Kodesh. In a story, David HaMelech wants to go away. He wants to hide from Shaul, because Shaul might kill him. So David and Yonatan make a pact, and they make a certain deal. And in this story, they make a pact, and they say the following lines to each other. Verse 8. Ve'atita chesed al avdecha, ki bivrit adnai hebetat avdecha imach, v'im yesh bi'avon hamiteni ata ve'aravicha lama zet v'eni. So David asks Yonatan, please do with me a kindness, because we have some of the covenant, right? Do not have me killed by your father, do me a kindness. And later on, after Yonatan says yes, David responds again, he says, v'lo yuhodenu chai, v'lo tasei madi chesed adonai v'lo amut. Because you're doing this chesed to me, and or as a result of this chesed that you're doing and I will not die, v'lo tachrit et chasdecha me'im beiti ad olam, your chesed will never cease to exist in my life, v'lo be'achrit adnai toivei David ish me'al p'nei hadama. And no matter what happens to me, I will always owe you this chesed. Right? They make effectively a pact. You do me this chesed, and I will be forever yours, forever committed to doing chesed to you.
I don't think he lived up to it.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second. We'll talk about that in a second. It's interesting. So what happens? We're told by Yechot Yonatan and Beit David, so Yonatan indeed makes a covenant with David, the Kesha Anayim Yad Oy Beit David, by Yosef Yonatan Lashpiat David Behavatoso, Ki Avat Nafsho Ahivo. We're told that Yonatan further makes this promise to David because he loved him, because he was very devoted to David. Now there's something really interesting in this relationship. We have a male relationship with another male, right? Whether that's sexual or not, that's an interesting side debate that's really not our topic at all. And as Mikey just pointed out, is this a bilateral relationship at this point? David says, I promised you that I'm going to pay you back, right? We're going to have this chesed. But who loves who here? Yonatan loves David.
Well, he puts David in the head of his father.
Does we ever told that David loves Yonatan? No, we're not. We're not. I'm sure David had a lot of regard for Yonatan, but we have a sense of it's not fully bilateral. There's something. There's a slight, you know, it's not fully. Yeah, it's not fully equal here. What? Well, that was his death afterwards, yeah. Well, that was his death in a second. When he's alive, though, before we get to his death. There's such a love between them, but it seems like it's a lot heavier on one side. Like one person is doing a lot more. Right? Think about just the cases. I mean, David certainly is in a more precarious situation, but Yonatan is risking his own life with his father, and David is, you know, certainly he's not, maybe not the, doesn't have the opportunity to save Yonatan's life, but the story is not a story of him sacrificing for Yonatan. If anything, Yonatan is doing something for him, and he's just like, oh, thank you. You know, I promise to do something in the future. Interestingly enough, in the book of Ruth, we also have a story of amazing chesed. And while I certainly would not say that Naomi is, you know, not a kind individual, she does great things, the relationship between Ruth and Naomi is it bilateral?
No, Ruth does a lot more.
Ruth does a lot more. A lot more. And I'm not saying that I'm up here to blame Naomi. It's not a blame thing. It's really just pointing out that Ruth is just going above and beyond, way beyond. And here too we have a relationship between two women. Not two men, but two women. That's, you know, certainly not a typical relationship between that, you know, it's the same gender. And we have this idea of chesed that animates relationship, and it's one-sided. There's something really interesting in that. And that David is given the opportunity later in life. David is given the opportunity that someone else pays him back in some ways the chesed that his great-grandmother gave. Right? Just as we saw earlier that his great-grandmother's zechut, her merit, kind of gave him this chesed with regard to Abigail and Itai Hagiti. So maybe here too, Yonatan treats him the same way because of the chesed of his great-grandmother, because of Ruth. But the story doesn't end there. I think so far it's clear David's chesed, certainly Yonatan is doing the bulk of the work. Yonatan dies in battle with Shaul. After his death, David says the following thing he proclaims it out loud. He says to people, this is the next, quote on the page, on the back page. It says as follows. This is in chapter 9. Vayomer David, hachi yesh od asher notar levet Shaul, ve'estechesed imo bavur Yonatan. David asks around, he sends his message around, can you find out, is there anyone left from the family of Shaul, because I want to do a chesed with Yonatan. Vayomer Amelech, Yonatan hears that there is a son, ha'efes od ish levet Shaul, ve'estem ochesed Elohim, you repeat that line again, and he finds out that indeed there is an individual. His name is Mephibosheth. He is a crippled son of Yonatan. And David comes to him and says, don't be scared. I'm not here to kill you, even though you're my competition in some ways. I'm not here to threaten you. I'm actually here to invite you to eat in my palace. And why am I doing this? Vayomer lo David, al tira. Ki aso eseimcha chesed bavur Yonatan avicha v'hashoviti lach kos de Shaul avicha v'atato chalechem al shulchani tamid. He tells him, don't worry, I am going to do a chesed for you, and I'm going to return to you the fields of your father Shaul, and you will be able to eat the bread on my table forever. Now, that verse has, I think, incredible resonances with the story of Megillat Ruth, right? David is paying back a chesed, right? Paying back, we'll talk about in a second again, the paying back. But what is the chesed he's doing here? He is doing a kindness towards Yonatan and Yonatan's son by extension, by returning a field, right? Do we have a field being returned or sold or something of that sort in the book of Ruth?
Yes.
Right, the whole point is that the fields of Boaz are being sold and being bought back by the family, right? Being returned to their right ancestral owner in effect. And by doing so, and throughout the story, Ruth and Naomi are given what by Boaz? They're given barley. They're given food. They're given bread over and over again. David is giving bread to Yonatan's son here. So we have this real remarkable sense of David kind of, you know, it comes back the other way. David now is kind of trying to pay it back. And I think it's true that you certainly can read the story again, more cynically, and you can say, David is just paying back because he owes a debt and he just, you know, wants to be, you know, even, you know, tick for tat. He's not really, you know, such a great guy here. You certainly can read it that way. There certainly are those who do read it that way. But Yonatan's dead here, right? He doesn't owe Yonatan anything in terms of, like, Yonatan's never going to know. You know, maybe in Olam HaMet he will, but certainly not in this life, in this world. Yonatan's not going to know. Yonatan's not going to do anything. And in theory, Mephibosheth even a threat to him. That's why he has to calm him down. And yet David goes out of his way to pay back Yonatan and his sons for the chesed. And I think by doing so, not only is David's chesed one which animates who he is, the same way that it animates his great-grandmother, it animates Ruth, but I think it also kind of takes it in some ways a step further. Because it's not just a unilateral chesed, it's actually a chesed that acknowledges the past chesed as well. It's a chesed that says, I know we have a relationship based on chesed, and I want to continue that relationship. I want to acknowledge what you did in the past, and I want to continue that moving forward. These aren't just chesed acts in isolation, they're part of a unit of chesed. Mm-hmm. And I think
But I think if I remember correctly, and I thought there was this whole thing with Mephibosheth later.
Yeah, later on.
Where he takes away half of it, unfairly takes away half of it at the end of the day, and he doesn't get, I don't even remember if he gets to go to his table anymore. This is hardly a...
You are right, at the end of the story, it does get a lot more complicated. You're right that I'm oversimplifying it a bit. There certainly needs to be more analysis. David, at the end of his life, there's a lot to talk about. Is David, at the end of his life, the same person he was at the beginning of his life? Which brings me to my last point, I want to end with this, which is that I think if you take a careful look at throughout Tanakh, and perhaps really looking at the Davidic dynasty, I think the thing that really animates the Davidic dynasty, more we've talked about this in the past classes, that sometimes, right, what differentiates David from Shaul is that David listens to God, which is true, and David and Shaul fails to do so. But more so than that, the thing that really animates the Davidic dynasty, and it's a word that appears over and over again, is the word of chesed. Olam chesed yibaneh, as long as forever that the chesed is built in the house of David, the kingship of David is going to have that dynasty. And when the kingship loses that chesed, at that moment, the kingship will be lost. Such as in later times, where David's grandson, Rehoboam, is no longer as kind to the people, but he wants to tax heavily, and his kingdom is split. And by the end of the Beit HaMikdash, at the end of the temple period, when the kingdom is lost, was actually pretty explicit in many of the prophets that the actions of the wealthy, of the nobles, and of the kings was not particularly kind to the poor, to the weak, to the, you know, to the lower members of the, lowest members of society. And you get the sense, and it's actually explicit, that they're not really, don't really have the sense of chesed. And I think if I had to summarize everything we've seen so far, is that I think all of these connections between Shmuel and Ruth are meant to point us to the direction of what really defines the Davidic dynasty, something which is defined already by David's great-grandmother, by Ruth. It's the attribute of chesed. As long as there is chesed, they are going to be a successful dynasty. God is going to be with them in that merit. When they lose their chesed, unfortunately, that's when Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to be with them. The kingdom will be lost and will go into exile. But on a positive note, though, I think the point of this holy parallels is to show the real power of chesed. That chesed can be so powerful, not only in the story of Ruth, that she's able to, you know, preserve a family legacy, but it's so powerful that it even can preserve and upkeep and motivate or inspire a dynasty. And that I think as we enter the holiday of Shavuot, we should be inspired by the model of David HaMelech and by his grandmother, by Ruth, to have a life of chesed, to be act of kindness, not only unilateral act of kindness, but also bilateral act of kindness, kindness where we reciprocate and we acknowledge past kindnesses, we have a relationship of kindness. And I think in their merit, hopefully we'll be able to bring back the Davidic dynasty in their merit.
Good luck. Thank you so much.